Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's conversation with 91-year-old Al Peguero. He's spent his whole life in Merced, California, except for 3 years in the Navy in World War II. His ship, the light cruiser USS Reno, put together quite a track record in the final 15 months of World War II. 541 feet long and loaded with firepower, the Reno supported aircraft carriers throughout the Pacific. Guam, Saipan, Tinian, Iwo Jima, you name it. In October 1944, the Reno shot down 6 Japanese planes off of Formosa and escaped major damage when an enemy torpedo plane crashed into her fantail. 10 days later, during the Battle of Leyte Gulf, Al Peguero and the crew of the Reno witnessed the tragic end of the USS Princeton, an aircraft carrier that took a direct hit from a Japanese bomb and was engulfed in flames. The Reno was one of 4 ships that would suffer their own damage while trying to fight the fire on the Princeton, but that carrier could not be saved, and the Reno was ordered to fire torpedoes to sink her. In another 10 days, the Reno came close to suffering that same fate when a Japanese submarine caught everyone off guard in the middle of the night, using a torpedo to blast a giant hole in the side of Al Peguero's ship. You're telling this story about the night you guys were hit, and you lived through it, and you've told this story a few times, but I'm imagining people hearing this for the first time. They want to understand, A, how bad it was, and B, how bad it could have been if it didn't happen just the way it was. And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't I read that there was also a torpedo that struck your ship but didn't detonate and was actually lodged in the hull?
I didn't know that part. When we got hit, it was 11:30 at night. And I know he shook me out of bed.
Right.
And I fell on the deck, and I got up and I grabbed my pants first. Some guys didn't even put their clothes on. Some guy was in the shower, taking a shower, and they just ran naked to the battle stations. I grabbed a pair of pants that I had hanging by my bunk, and got put them on and went to my battle stations. But it didn't take long. Everybody was in battle stations in a matter of minutes.
Did you ever have a chance to look at the damage from those torpedoes?
Yes, but we didn't even think of nothing of it. From the Marshall Islands, they patched us up, a little bit of patching up.
The only reason I ask is so you can tell people listening how bad the damage was to your ship, and maybe how worse it could have been.
Oh, yeah, if it hit the magazine, it had been it. And as far as I heard, like the Juno, that's the one that took the 5 brothers down. Mm-hmm. We heard it took about 600 guys with it. When they blow up bad.
So if this torpedo had hit in a little different spot, it could have claimed 10 times as many lives.
Oh, yeah.
You might not be here right now.
Right.
And you had seen that firsthand with other ships. You guys were there when the Princeton was hit.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that.
Uh-huh.
I imagine that was kind of hard to forget. Yeah, can you tell us about that night when the Princeton was hit?
Well, when the Princeton was hit, it was during the daytime when we sunk it. We fought fire in the morning. It was got hit early in the morning, and we fought the fire for 3 or 4 hours, and we just couldn't put the fire out.
So you guys are on your ship?
On our ship with hoses. I got pictures there of the ship with the hoses.
What were you doing during that time?
We were watching the firemen, and we were dumb because we was there watching the firemen, and we could see them from here to the trees there. They were fighting the fire.
Yeah.
And then we pulled away. I don't know why, what reason we pulled away. The Reno did pull away, and by the time we got from here to maybe a block, it blew up. And they claimed that they had killed about 400 guys that were fighting the fire from the Birmingham, from other ships that were on the Princeton fighting the fire. When it blew up, it killed about 400 guys. But we didn't see that. We were from here to by the parking lot.
Well, there was that, where guys on another ship were killed in an explosion. There was also, as I understand, a time while you guys are fighting this fire that you're so close that the carrier deck of the Princeton actually took out one of your guns on your ship, right?
Yeah, we lost a 40-millimeter, but I think it was on the bumps, you know, twisting.
As the water is rocking you back and forth.
Yeah.
So then you pull away at just the right time to avoid this other explosion.
Right. We pull away, then straighten out and come back in. I don't know why they let us stand out on the main deck watching the firefighters. Yeah, that was a big mistake there, too.
Not the safest place to be?
Not the safest place to be. We should have been in our own, below decks, or in our own gun turret. The mound on that 5-inch 38, they're about 2.5-inch thick, that metal.
Yeah.
So we could be pretty safe, man, from a blowing up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why nobody thought of it, but then.
Again, you're seeing a lot of things and experiencing a lot of things that you never have before. You're still
right.
Just a teenager.
Yeah, we.
But what did that look like? I mean, how unbelievable was that scene that you were looking at? Can you describe for us what it looked like?
Well, it was just a big fire, and we could tell we wouldn't gain nothing from it. There were two destroyers and two cruisers with the hoses fighting the fire. You know, from both sides. Nobody was thinking they were going to blow up.
But then they did learn after that explosion. They said, well, we can't have this happen again.
Happen again.
So then they make the decision, well, we need to sink the Princeton.
Yeah, they gave the Princeton the Reno orders to sink it. As far as I know, we hit it two times. We carried torpedoes.
Yeah.
We could have a set of three in each side in the front. And they gave us orders to sink it. So we pulled away from here to the parking lot, and we hit it.
So your ship gets the orders to sink another American ship.
Yeah.
To avoid further devastation and loss.
Right.
I mean, this has to be a pretty morbid day. I mean, was this hard to believe that this was all happening?
Oh yeah, you know, couldn't believe we hit one of our own ships. Can you imagine a carrier? You could see the planes were on the decks, on the main deck.
Yeah.
That we never got off. And so it was a big loss, big loss. You know, the carrier was the most important ship aboard in the fleet.
Yeah.
Because of the planes it carried.
And it's not like today where you've got a phone in your hand that can tell you, well, this is what's happening at all these other places. The only thing you know about the war is what you're seeing there right in front of your eyes.
Right.
That had to be a little demoralizing.
Yeah. We like I said, after it happened, we knew it was a mistake. And we lucked out because we pulled away. But if we hadn't pulled away, we'd have been right among them when it blew up. I don't know why they didn't expect that. They should have expected it because there was airplanes on fire.
There are a lot of things to fuel that fire.
Right.
And to explode. So those are a couple of the real memorable experiences that you and the crew of the Reno had. Mm. What about the day-to-day? And when you guys are shelling islands for an invasion... Or you know, there's situations where some of your other gun crews probably would do this more. You're firing at enemy aircrafts, trying to make sure a kamikaze doesn't come through. When those kind of situations are going and you're doing your job on that 5-inch gun, what was that like? What were the things you had to do?
We loaded the guns, our guns. They shoot them and we keep loading them as fast as they needed. The gun is controlled by somebody up above us.
Right.
When they would start shooting, that's when they would give orders to be prepared to... And we'd be getting more ammunition from the main deck below there. And then our walls would be all ammunition, all around inside of us, in the turret.
Mm-hmm.
All around us, there'd be powder barrels, and then there'd be shells. And then those shells would have a combination that they can be set at so high it would blow up.
Right.
And so all that was going on at that same time. And we were just kids. We didn't think nothing of it. We didn't think we could get hit.
Thought you were invincible, huh?
Right.
So you're two levels below the deck?
Yeah.
And you're putting the powder in? Or you're handing the powder to somebody else?
Yeah, handing the powder to somebody else. We took it from the main magazine down below us.
Mm-hmm.
There were guys down the bottom of the ship, inside the ship, way in the bottom, getting the ammunition and putting it on a conveyor going to us. We took it out as fast as we needed, and then our walls would be covered, shells and powder.
I'm just trying to imagine what it was like. It sounds like it was kind of nonstop. Once you started, you just kept passing it to the next guy over and over and over again, right?
Just put them on, yeah.
Was that tiring?
No, we never thought. It was noisy.
I bet it was. What did that sound like?
Oh, gee. A 5-inch... pretty big lounge, and then we didn't have no protection.
Nothing on your ears.
Nothing on our ears. And I lost my hearing on my right side here. But we didn't think nothing of it. We just kept going.
I'm just trying to add a little perspective for folks who've never been in a 5-inch gun turret on a big cruiser like that. Have you ever heard any noise anywhere else in the world that compares to the noise of that gun going off?
No. No, I don't think so. No more noise louder than that. And then there were three sets of guns together.
Right. just for comparison, how do you think it would compare to me grabbing two pans from your kitchen and slamming you on both ears with them?
I think it'd be pretty close.
Probably be pretty similar.
Yeah.
But this is over and over and over again the whole time you're in the Pacific.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So November 3rd, 44, you guys are torpedoed. You mentioned 48 sailors lost their lives.
Right.
Did you know any of those guys?
Yeah. Yeah. I got pictures of them there. When the ship got hit, the automatic went out in the ocean on their own, you know what I mean? Some died where we could put them in boxes, wrap them around with a cloth and a weight. The way I understood, they put like a 5-inch 38 shell. They weigh about 50 pounds, and they wrap them around the guys, and then they put them over the side, down they go.
Burial at sea.
Yeah. Burial at sea.
How hard was that? I mean, these are guys you've been on this ship with, knew personally.
Yeah, and then I helped carry some of them that night. The officers gave us orders to pack one guy over here and try to help the guys that were hurt. Stuff like that goes real fast. And sure, there were some guys I knew real well. One guy from Fresno, his name was Young, and before we left, he went and got married, and he never made it back. I didn't see him when it happened. But when it was over with, we knew who didn't make it.
So you think of that widow who never really got to have her husband.
I thought about going to see the family sometimes, and then I put it off. What do you say? I mean, all you say is how it happened that we got hit at 11:30 at night in the Philippines.
Well, when you talk about, you know, those 48 men who lost their lives and... Yeah. A gentleman you just mentioned who had been newly married and all that, and you're actually carrying some of these guys and moving them around your ship, and then you watch them buried at sea.
Buried at sea.
And you hear the bugler play taps.
Yeah, I got pictures there when they buried them.
What goes through your mind in those moments?
It could be me. It could be me, and you know what's going to happen. It's going to go down so far, and the sharks are going to get it. All that goes through your mind. But what else can you do? I mean, see, between the time we got hit and the time we got to the Marshall Islands, it was about 2 weeks later, see? How can you keep them?
Well, and yeah, exactly. So you had to bury them there.
Yeah. And,
but that brings up another point. As slow as you guys had to go when you're being towed after they've righted the ship somewhat, so you're not listing as badly, but you're still a damaged ship. You've got no power. You're getting tugged all the way there.
Yeah.
That was probably pretty scary, too, because if any of these enemy ships come around, I mean, you guys are a sitting duck.
See, we had four destroyers went around us for protection.
But when you had been hit, you'd had just as much protection, right?
Oh, yeah.
You guys had a bunch of guys around then.
Yeah, I don't know how that the submarine got in. What they probably done there, they see us coming in the horizon, and they just wait for whoever gets closest to them. And don't make no noise. Mm. Nobody will pick them up. When we got hit, we must have had about three carriers and maybe a dozen destroyers and three or four cruisers, because each carrier usually carry a cruiser to help them for any aircraft. When we got hit, nobody picked it up. Usually somebody will pick it up, and boy, the noise will come on, you know, battle stations.
Right. I get the sense that you have a lot of respect for your captain because he was given by his superiors the option to abandon ship, and he refused.
Yeah. He said, no, I'm taking my ship home. My first job was when we got hit. I went on a tugboat with Lino, and I were together. I don't know why they kept us together, and we was on there for about 12, 14 days, and we got back to the Marshall Islands where we had a repair ship, and I went on a repair ship to help. We patched up that hole.
You were part of that, patching up the hole on the Reno?
Yeah.
What'd you guys have to do? Cut some sheet metal?
Put sheet metal and put a whole new patch. They patched it up. That was underwater. And then from there, we went to the Amity Islands. I guess it took about a month there just doing that. From there, we went to Hawaii. We came back to Hawaii. We had everything covered up. All our numbers were covered. Letters, anything was all covered up. So they wouldn't know who it was. We loaded up and we came to San Pedro. All the guys from the West Coast, California, Texas, Arizona, Seattle, all them guys from their area, we got off. They let us go home. And they gave us a month pay, and they gave us a month and traveling time to catch the Reno at South Carolina.
I bet your mom was happy to see you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, we stopped in San Pedro. We horsed around there, and we hitchhiked home, the three of us. Another guy named Lefty, and Lino and I, the three of us came together from there. hitchhiking. And it would be hard to get a ride for three guys at one time. And we finally got home, and it was dark. It was real dark. It was already 8, 9 o'clock at nighttime in the wintertime. I seen my sister go crazy with the lights on and everything. They all went crazy, and they heard us coming home. I never forgot that day when we got home.
So you're home, but you know you're going to have to go back, and you probably thought you had more combat in front of you.
Well, we thought we'd get there, and the ship would be ready to go again. It wasn't quite ready.
And by the time it was, the war was over, but the Reno still had an important role to play, and we'll hear about it when we come back. Head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos and even a short video with Al, and we'll have the rest of his story, including how his honor flight experience produced a special reunion with a piece of his ship. When Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. If you're an RVer, you've probably heard about the new line of Grand Design fifth wheels, travel trailers, and toy haulers. What sets Grand Design apart is the long list of premium standard features you'll find on the entire line. You'll also find the largest selection of Grand Design RVs at Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states and online at rvcountry.com.